Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Looking for a fun and relaxing way to unwind? Download Two Dots, the free puzzle game with over 5,000 unique levels. Connect dots to solve colorful puzzles and collect rewards. With different gameplay modes like scavenger hunt and arcade, there's always a new adventure. Don't want a game alone? Connect and engage with the larger Two Dots community to match up your skills. If you're looking for the perfect game to help you relax but also keep you engaged, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This is your last chance to save 65% on a full year of BODi. I'm Carl, co-founder of BODi. That's B-O-D-I. And I want to help you lean into your decision to start working out and eating better. Right now, if you sign up for a one-year subscription to BODi, I'll give you 65% off. Look, I know it's not easy to get fit and lose weight, especially if you're trying to figure it out by yourself. But we make it simple. Just follow a program for 20 to 30 minutes day by day and lose 5 to 10 pounds a month. We have over 120 programs that have been tested and proven to work, and almost 300,000 five-star reviews in the App Store to prove it. BODi also has complete eating plans and thousands of healthy, delicious recipes. So stop guessing and start seeing results with BODi. And let me give you 65% off right now so you save big on the app that CNN underscored named Best Fitness App. But the sale ends this week, so don't wait. Sign up for a year of BODi and save 65%. Just go to BODi.com. That's B-O-D-I with an I.com.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, Justin. We've had a few requests to get our premium episodes up on iTunes. And of course, premium episodes, they're just a way for you to purchase an episode from us to help the show out. And we now have 5 up on iTunes, one of which has a corrected price. The other 4, I have yet to get the prices corrected on. By that, I mean, one episode is $1.99 and the others are all $9.99. Now, this is out of our control until we can make a request for iTunes to lower the prices. If you're an Apple user, you can purchase our premium episodes through iTunes. So please go out and check it out. Kelly Thomas is $1.99 now. The other four episodes, well, we'll try and get them to lower the prices soon. But
you can pay the $9.99 if you want, but if you just wait a little bit, they'll come down in price. Tonight's case, Pamela Smart, 1990s. I was still in high school. How does this go, Aaron?
May 1st, 1990, Greg Smart, 24 years old, is shot and killed inside of his condominium in Derry, New Hampshire. The place appeared to have been ransacked, and Pamela Smart, Greg's wife of less than a year, discovered his body. An investigation reveals that Pamela Smart may have coerced her lover, a high school student named Billy Flynn,
16 years old,
to murder her husband with the help of three friends. In the end, you're left with a woman who says that she was not involved, and you have these high school students who all say that, yes, she was, and so were they.
This was pretty big news back then. This was huge. Some people say it's the first trial that was ever televised.
The first one they say that was televised gavel to gavel. Mm-hmm. You could tune in and see what was going on that day. Was there a witness testifying? Was there a forensic expert? You name it.
I know that the Menendez brothers, they actually murdered their parents the year before, but they weren't captured until about the same time as the Pamela Smart thing. This is a new deal for television, for people to see real court cases, and it exploded. Now, I was in high school. I wasn't paying attention, so I really missed the crest of this when it was really popular. I never watched any of the movies that are based off of this. What is it? To Die For, and I don't even remember the other one. But
To Die For, yes, that was starring Nicole Kidman, and it was a fictional film, but it was, I suppose, based on this story.
So multiple books and movies are made about this case. Pretty big deal. I just want everyone to know that I came into this fairly fresh without any kind of preconceived notion.
Well, we can understand why these cases were so big, because in one you had the two men who murdered their parents. And then you have, in this case, it's a hot for teacher case. Pamela Smart was never a teacher. We'll talk in a little bit about why it's a hot for teacher case. There's an explanation for that. Now, some backgrounds. Pamela Wojcis, later Pamela Smart, grew up in Coral Gables, Florida. Her parents moved to New Hampshire when she was in the eighth grade. It said the move was due to their father's concern about the crime rate in Miami. She has an older sister named Elizabeth and a younger brother named John, who's named after her father. She was known as an exceptional student. She attended Pinkerton Academy for high school and made the honor roll every year. She was a cheerleader for 3 years. One thing that's notable about her was that she was obsessed with the rock group Van Halen. And this is what I was referring to earlier, Hot for Teacher. Van Halen has a song, Hot for Teacher. Mm-hmm.
Back when Diamond Dave was the singer. It was the only Van Halen I ever listened to was when, you know, David Lee Roth was with the band.
In her Pinkerton Academy yearbook, 1985, she is featured she's in the yearbook, and she lists her pursuit as to dance the night away with David Lee Roth.
Like I said, Diamond Dave, man.
Yeah, Diamond Dave. Her first car had a vanity plate that read Halen. She would later get a dog as a gift from Gregory Smart after she graduated college. It would be a Shih Tzu that she named Halen.
Of course she did.
So she's a little into rock music. That takes us to Greg, because Greg looked like a rocker. He had the long hair, and he was very much into rock and roll, just like Pamela was. After she graduated Pinkerton Academy, she enrolled at Florida State University. By this time, she and Greg had met at a New Year's party, and they said ever since she met him, and this was in 1986, they were inseparable. Now, she grew up in Florida, and after she graduates high school, She wants to go to college in Florida. Now, her father, John, was an airline pilot. And so going to Florida, not a big deal because she was able to fly back to New Hampshire to visit her boyfriend mm-hmm. whenever she wanted. Those are perks of her dad being an airline pilot. Probably got free flights.
Yeah.
After a while, he would end up moving down to Florida to be near her. I think he moved to Tallahassee. And after she graduated, though, she agreed to move back to New Hampshire because that's where he really wanted to live. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to live in Florida.
Yeah. They're kind of Northeast type people.
Well, Pamela, though, really loved Florida. The Northeast is a little cool, a little cold, but she wanted to be with Greg, so she capitulated. They met in 1986 at a New Year's Eve party. They started dating February of 1987 officially. Just a little over 2 years later, they end up getting married. May 7th, 1989 in Lowell, Massachusetts. They would move into a condominium on Misty Morning Drive. Now that they're married, I think they're starting to figure out they need to get on with their careers. Greg would end up cutting his hair and looking more preppy.
Yeah, he looked respectable businessman kind of.
Right. His father was an insurance. That's what he decided to get into. Pamela, she took a job as a media services director at Winnicunnet High in Hampton, New Hampshire. This is where they start running into trouble. She's already had to give up Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's given up his look that she really liked. So he doesn't look the way she wants him to look. They're also not spending a lot of time together.
He's hanging out with his friends a lot more.
Yes, he likes to be outdoors, and he likes to be with his friends. And he's really spent a lot of time leading up to this moment to become an insurance salesman, studying to take a test so he could qualify to do that.
Well, that's not very rock and roll.
No, he's not a rebel anymore. Maybe not so attractive in her eyes, but she still married him. In the meantime, he's telling his parents everything's great. And he's hoping to get a family going. He's thinking about getting a house.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that knew them said, Pamela's not really into settling down and having children. They figured that Greg would have to work on her for a while and try and convince her that this is what they should do. The other thing that happens when she's at Winnicunnet High is she volunteers to be a facilitator for a drug awareness program. Now, this drug awareness program is titled Project Self-Esteem. Mm-hmm. And students, as well as adults, act as facilitators in the program, and all freshmen at the high school are required to go through the program.
And she makes friends with some of these teens, which isn't weird. I mean, they're not that far apart in age, technically. She really befriends some of them to the point where I find it a little odd, because when I was 22, I wasn't hanging out with 16-year-olds.
It does happen.
True.
And it did happen when I was 16. I know some friends of mine and I, we would hang out with one of their brothers and their friends sometimes.
I was 13, I remember.
Yeah. So it does happen. One of the people that she meets is Cecilia Pierce.
Yeah.
She's 15 years old. She considers herself to be a friend of Pamela's.
Yeah.
And just like you said, Pamela befriends people. So she doesn't act as the adult. She's acting as a friend.
Yeah, they're hanging out. They're going shopping. Pierce actually spends the night at her house. Kind of friendship.
Right. Greg's out and Pamela has brought over Cecilia to hang out. She would also end up hanging out quite a bit with Billy Flynn. His name is William Flynn, but everyone calls him Billy. At age 12, he moved from California to Seabrook, New Hampshire. Soon after, his dad, he was a partner in a small construction company. His dad died in an auto accident. His mother had to work multiple jobs to support the family, so he didn't really have any supervision like he otherwise would have.
Mm-hmm.
Minors, you can't really see their records, so we don't know what kind of a kid he was, but there is a lot of positive information about him. Back in the day, he and his friends Vance, also known as JR, and Patrick, also known as Pete, were known as the Three Musketeers. They would hang out all the time, and they were doing odd jobs for neighbors. Elderly neighbors got helped, and sometimes at no charge. Vance Latamy Jr. lived with his parents in a converted mobile home. His mother befriends a woman who was concerned for her son because he had dropped out of school. Now, his name is Ralph Welch, and he lived in a shack with his dad. And the sad thing is he literally had garbage bags in the windows. I mean, it's a shack. Really run down, just really destitute. And this woman was concerned for her son. So Vance's mother takes it upon herself to invite Ralph into their house and to encourage him to go back to school. Like, we'll give you a good place to stay. Not that they had a great, I mean, they didn't have a great home either, but they had it a lot better than Ralph did. So he lived with them, and I guess Junior sort of saw him as a brother. So they weren't hanging out a lot, but they were cordial to each other, and there was respect there. Another person involved in this case is Patrick Pete Randall. He had some issues with school. What we do know about him was that he was truant a lot, and it actually cost him graduation into 10th grade. So he repeated his freshman year. One other person to know about is Raymond Fowler. He was a couple of years older than these other guys. He was just a good acquaintance. They would meet up sometimes, but he wasn't really part of their group. He was like a really good acquaintance.
Yeah.
These are the players that are involved in this case. Early on in the marriage, there's some diversion between this couple.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
He's changed his whole look. He's changed the direction of his life. He's not telling his parents that there are any issues, yet he's not hanging out with her a lot. He's hanging out with his friends, and she's befriended some high school students.
And he's stayed out all night, and the next day he says he was drunk, just passed out at his friend's house, and he lies to her because in reality he'd actually gone out and had a one-night stand with another woman. So right off the bat, this isn't the best circumstance or relationship.
This was in December of 1989. So obviously there's some issues with the marriage. You have Pamela spending a lot of time with these teenagers, and she would take Billy and Cecilia out to eat, to play arcade games and shopping malls. She had the car. She had a 2-seat Honda. They would all cram in there and she would drive them off to places. Sometime after Greg admitted his one-night stand, Pamela spoke to Billy about their relationship. What I mean by that is she starts talking to Billy about them.
Yeah.
And she asked him, "Do you ever think about me when I'm not around?" And he replied, "Yeah."
What kind of sparked this conversation, though, is Cecilia actually said, "Billy likes you," to Pamela. And so that got the conversation going. So they're all very close, and they all know each other's business.
Because they're spending so much time together.
Yeah.
And Pamela says to him, "Well, I think about you all the time." Now, put this into perspective. He's a young teenager, and he has this older, attractive woman telling him that she's interested in him.
Yeah. That's game over.
It's pretty powerful stuff. Now, on February 15th, this is the day after Valentine's Day, Greg's out of town. Pamela drives Billy and Cecilia to a video store to rent a bunch of movies.
9.5 weeks.
Well, that's one of them. They actually rent from what I understand, they rented a stack of movies.
Yeah, but 9.5 weeks is kind of the...
That's the first one I think they put in, right?
Yeah, that's the date movie that, you know, you... Yeah.
So you wonder if the other ones are just cover, you know, like, oh, we'll get all these movies, and then, oh, we'll just put this one in.
Yeah.
And the movie heats up, and as that's happening, Pamela asks Billy to go upstairs with her and give her a hand.
Yeah.
He goes up there. She has put Van Halen on the CD player, and I think she puts on the OU812 album. She ends up coming out of the bathroom in a negligee. Let's just say things get really heated up in the bedroom. Cecilia, after more than 2 hours, finally heads upstairs and calls out.
They don't hear her.
"I hope you guys are decent." Well, they're on the floor naked. So she heads back downstairs. This is significant because it was the next morning when Pamela first, and this is according to not her, but others, namely Billy, says that she first says they can't carry on a relationship with Greg around. She will continue, according to him, to have sex with him, and every time will tell him that Greg needs to go.
They can't be together.
Right. There's no future there as long as Greg's around. Pamela, according to Billy, was manipulating him with the sex, putting Greg in a bad light by claiming that he was abusive and sleeping around on her. So she was making him Billy's enemy.
Yeah.
Because now Billy can save her.
Billy's can come in and be the hero.
Yes. I think the reason that Billy Flynn gets on her radar is because, as I said, Greg Smart has cut his hair. He's not into the rock lifestyle like he was when they met and was the whole driving force behind them connecting. Well, she meets Bill Flynn, and Billy Flynn has long hair. He loves rock and roll, particularly Motley Crue, and he plays guitar.
Yeah. Now, he's a little young, but he's everything that she's kind of looking for, that edginess, that free-spiritedness.
It's that lifestyle. It's the image. It's what she wants to be connected with. Pamela Smart sent Bill Flynn love letters, and she also sent him a picture, a very sexy picture of her in a bikini.
And what do you think of the statutory rape of her being 22 years old and him being 16?
That's where you have an older woman and a younger boy.
Yeah.
Getting involved in a sexual relationship. And a lot of times, and it's mostly from men, and maybe this is why it goes that way, they'll say, "Oh, good for him."
Yeah, it's considered a badge of honor for a younger man to be with an older woman.
But the reason I think that society has a problem with this is because an older, more mature person can manipulate a younger person and get them to do bad things or get them into trouble. And this is exactly what we saw in this case. I think that's another reason why this case blew up, is because this is the sensational part of it. You have an older woman taking advantage of a younger man, just clouding his mind with sex and promises of an incredible future. But there's something that Billy has trouble with, and that's that she makes it clear that Greg would need to die because she can't divorce him, because Greg would own everything. He would take the house, the furniture, and her precious dog, Halen. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't have that. There's some talk about there's a mild attempt on Greg's life, as they call it. But, you know, when we read about it, what really happens? I mean, Billy ends up driving around and showing up to the house late. And by that time, Greg's already inside.
Yeah.
And so they miss their opportunity to attack him.
And Billy's with Fowler that night.
Raymond Fowler.
Yeah.
Also known as Rame. A lot of these guys, a lot of these people have nicknames. Even Pamela had the nickname Pammy, which is spelled P-A-M-E.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy just couldn't do it. And then eventually, though, he gives into the pressure.
But while this plan is unfolding, Cecilia is asked to find a gun for them to use. And she says that one of her coworkers owns a gun and her father owns a gun. The coworker has like a handgun, and she was actually setting up a scenario where her coworker would bring her gun to work but leave it in the car, and then Billy or somebody would break into the car and steal it. I think her father had a shotgun, and according to them, a shotgun was going to be too messy, so they didn't want to use a shotgun. They wanted to use a pistol or a handgun of some type. So Cecilia is kind of in the know that they're planning something, and she's has a hand in telling them where she knows where there's guns are. Now, it doesn't really go anywhere because they end up getting a gun from somewhere else.
Right. Pam says she'll pay $500 to each person who helps take Greg out, and that whoever's involved can take whatever they want from the condominium. She has three rules, though, that she said they must follow. One, no lights. She says that Greg could easily be scared off if he notices that there are lights on when there shouldn't be. He would become suspicious and probably just not go home at that point. He would drive away. Two, they need to put the dog away. They can't hurt the dog. They don't want the dog raising an alarm. She wants the dog safely stowed away somewhere else in the house.
Locked up in a bathroom or a basement or something.
Right. And she loved that dog. So, and three, she wanted them to use a gun. Just like you said, can't use a shotgun. Don't want to use a knife because it would create possibly just too much blood and would ruin furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Junior's grandmother's car was supposed to be their ride, but unexpectedly, it's in Haverhill where the grandmother lives. So I think the vehicle was supposed to be at the house, but ended up being at her house. So Pamela needs to take them to get the car. So they, of course, all jump in her car, and she takes them to, you know,
drops them off at the vehicle.
Right.
And then she goes on to the project, the self-esteem place, to argue about budget cuts or something.
And as some would say, this is her alibi.
Yeah.
Junior, though, his dad owns a .38 revolver, so he figures he'll just borrow that gun. They can use it if need be, and then he can clean it and return it without his dad even knowing. Pamela has given them some tips so that they aren't caught.
Wear dark clothing.
What she says is you need disposable clothing, stuff that you can just get rid of. You need to wear gloves. And then she's going to leave the cellar door unlocked, which is also known as a bulkhead. So they can sneak in that way, enter the house, they can ransack it, and then wait for Greg to come home. As we said in the summary, Gregory Smart would be murdered in his condominium. And this is what happens. He comes into his condominium, and Billy and Randall take Greg down to the floor, and they want him to comply. Randall's putting a knife to his throat, and he had actually planned to kill him with the knife, despite what Pamela wanted. You know, he loses his nerve. He can't do that. That's what I understand. And so that's when Billy pats his chest area where the gun is, and he'll pull it out and aim it at Greg. And before he pulls the trigger, he says, "God forgive me."
There is a lot of debate over which one actually pulled the trigger. They say that forensics shows that a left-handed, like there's a lot of debate here, but their story matches up. So it doesn't really matter at the end of the day who pulled the trigger. They agreed on who pulled the trigger. So
if you listen to them, it certainly sounds like Billy takes credit for it.
Yeah.
So we'll just go with that for sake of the story. I know that anytime you have two people involved with killing one person, there could be debate.
Yeah. But the defense later on will make this argument and drill it to nauseam, but it doesn't really matter. They were both in the house, both there at the scene. Neither one of them tried to stop it. and they both had weapons on them. So whatever story they give us is what we have to go with. And so they go with Billy's.
And I think if you follow the story, Billy's the one that has to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's his lover who's telling him, you need to get rid of Greg for us to be together. If he's going to seize the opportunity, if he's going to save the maiden in distress, he's the one that has to kill Greg.
Exactly. May 1st, 1990, that's when this goes down.
The first one to discover his body is Pamela Smart.
Yeah.
She arrives back home, and before we know it, she is banging on the neighbor's door and screaming.
She bangs on a lot of neighbors' doors because she doesn't think that they're coming fast enough. And the police are called, and she's actually allowed to come into one of the neighbor's house, and then they try to figure out, like, what happened? Did he have a heart attack? Well, you know, was he breathing, whatever? And it's pretty quick that they find the bullet wound in his head. The police investigators show up at the scene, and they're questioning Pamela Smart. She says she has no idea who's done this. She has no clue if Greg had any enemies, and she feels like it's a robbery gone wrong or something. She doesn't tell them anything, but they say, well, we need to exclude fingerprints and other things from the house, so give us a list of all the people that have been inside the house recently. And she gives them a list of like 9 or 10 names. Billy Flynn is not on that list, nor is Cecilia. So she excludes Billy's name. That's just a little telling because he's been in the house, but she doesn't want to talk about that.
Yeah, who else has she been hanging out with?
Yeah, exactly. Also, the police ask her about her friends and Greg's friends, and then they say, who are your friends exclusively? Only you hang out with and Greg has no affiliation with. Now, she gives them Cecilia's name at this point, along with other names. She still does not give Billy Flynn's name. The cops are contacting her friends, and they contact Cecilia, and they ask her, you know, what was the relationship like, and they're questioning her. So Cecilia is just saying, well, I don't think Pamela would have anything to do with this murder. She's kind of saying she doesn't know anything, but she consents to having the police put a wiretap on her phone. And she consents to wearing a wire and going and talking to Pamela. At this same time, Ralph Welch will come to investigators also, correct?
He had heard a rumor about what had happened, and he was spying on Junior's, you know, I guess you could say he was by his bedroom door, ear pressed against it and listening, and he heard some words that told him that these people were involved, meaning Pete, Junior, and Billy. He would confront them about it, but he would end up going with Junior's parents, the Latimies, to the police station and telling them everything he knew. One of the really strange things that happened was he said after they closed the door on him, because he did talk to them, Welch told the jury he heard one of them whisper, Bill's going to be pissed and you know who's going to be next. And so they asked him, what does that mean? He said, I thought they meant they were going to kill Raymond Fowler. So maybe killing a witness?
Yeah.
Because he heard that, he got upset and he opened the door on them. And I guess that's when they just admitted, yeah, we killed him and this is how it went down. He just didn't understand. How could they have done such a thing?
It's on June 10th that JR's father actually brings the murder weapon, the revolver, in to the police station. And 2 days later, they arrest Billy, Pete, and JR.
So these are the first arrests. Obviously, Welch's information was significant in this case because they were able to move on it.
It's June 14th when the police are getting the consent from Cecilia, but this is all happening at the same time. So whether or not Cecilia had anything to do with giving them the information, or if it's JR or his father bringing the gun. I mean, it's all happening simultaneously. So the cops are investigating and they're going in the right place. But this is a month after the murder. Pamela has not come forward to the police with any useful information whatsoever. Pamela Smart will end up having a conversation with Cecilia. During this conversation, she says some very incriminating things about herself and the being involved with the murder. The conversation kind of ends with, if you tell the truth, Cecilia, you're putting all of us in the slammer. You're putting all of us behind bars. Kind of insinuating, like, if you tell the truth, if you say that we all plan to do this, we're all going to jail or prison. So it's very damning. It's very incriminating on Pamela's part. So after the police hear this conversation that Pamela has with Cecilia, it's August 1st that the detective, Daniel Pelletier, goes to Smart's office unannounced, starts talking to her. Pam says, "What's up?" And he says, "Well, Pam, I have some good news and I have some bad news. The good news is that we solved the murder of your husband. The bad news is you're under arrest." She says, "What for?" And he says, "First degree murder." And he says, "Stand up and face the wall." So that's how the arrest goes down. And he's gone on multiple shows and TV shows and movies, and that's like the gotcha line that they like to put out there.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
The teenagers will be housed in the same jail area. And this is a big concern for Pamela because they say that, well, now they're all getting their story straight. And it is a little odd that you have multiple people that are accused of murder and you put them in cells right next to each other because now they can talk to each other. It's not typical practice, but it's not the end of the world either. They've already pretty much talked to investigators and told them everything. So once they're in jail cells, I don't know. Anyways, it's a point to bring up because they say that's an issue. All the boys implicate Pamela as the driving force, as the organizer, as the person who was telling them to do this and how to do it. Now, it was really telling Billy, not all of them. It was Billy who was the conduit for this plan. And Billy kind of recruited these other people in to help him. Now, the prosecutor says, if you testify against Pamela, I will give you all second-degree murder charges as opposed to first degree, and you'll have a possibility of parole.
That's key, because in New Hampshire, if you have first-degree murder conviction, you're not going to be paroled.
Yeah. So they agree, and Cecilia, on the other hand, she's going to testify too, but she's not charged with anything. Whether or not she was forthcoming with the police investigators in the beginning about finding the gun, possibly not, but she is not charged. She wasn't in the car. She wasn't in the house. She really was on the periphery out on this plan.
But you wonder, because she seemed to understand that something was probably going to happen.
Absolutely. She was in the know.
Why they didn't charge her or go after her is, I don't know. I guess I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah. As this goes to trial, you can watch a lot of this trial on YouTube. You can watch a lot of the testimonies that are happening. But before it even got there, it's all over the news. This little New Hampshire town is just an onslaught of media and reporters. The defense team asks for a change of venue, and the judge denies this. The defense team asks for a delay in the trial for it to blow over or not be so hot, which the judge denies that too. I kind of agree with the defense on the change of venue, because this is a little town and that's the biggest story. So how are you going to find impartial jurors here? The judge knows that this is going to be a high profile thing. There's media everywhere. So I think the judge was being a little selfish myself on, I want this. I want to be in the limelight. You know, I deserve it, or something to that effect. Most people will say that Pamela Smart was found guilty by the media and the public before it even went to trial. It's a possibility. It absolutely is. There were things that were in the newspapers and TV shows and the news about the story before it even was said in court. So it was a mess. Now, in court, one of the investigators is testifying, and he's pretty much laying out how Cecilia and the boys all knew about this. They all were engaged in this plan. Yet Pamela had, you know, her defense is saying she had no prior knowledge of this plan. They're saying that she had no idea who murdered her husband. So put that in perspective. She's saying she was not in the know, even though Cecilia and Billy were very close friends of hers. So close that they were talking about he likes you and things like that. Then after her husband's murder, she has no clue who did it. And so she's talking to Cecilia on the phone and in person. And she thinks that she's doing her own investigation to find out who murdered her husband. That's her statement is, I'm talking to Cecilia so I can figure out what happened, who did this. But if she knows to go talk to Cecilia, and Billy is her lover on the side that she's having an affair with, I think it's pretty obvious who killed her husband. And I don't think that she would have to do much investigative work to figure this mystery out. Her explanation of this whole conversation with Cecilia seems ridiculous. When you hear it, it's very damning. But her explanation is, well, I was trying to act like I knew something. I was trying to portray that I was in the know so Cecilia would tell me or give me more detail.
Why would Cecilia be the one with all the information? That's what I find curious.
Exactly.
Especially if, for whatever reason, she can't come up with Billy as having been involved in this situation. So what is Cecilia going to tell her?
That's my problem with her whole statement in this conversation is she's not going to police. She's doing her own investigative work. She has no idea who killed her husband, but she knows exactly who to go talk to.
Which is a high school student.
Yeah. That's best friends with her lover.
They would hang out a lot because Pamela would invite both of them along. So it's just very strange to me. And I mean, it's down now, but Pamela Smart has a support website and we visited it. And they make a big deal out of this that you can't understand anything that's being said and that, you know, she was just trying to get information from Cecilia. So she pretended to be involved to get information. But let's put it this way. Let's say for the sake of argument that Pamela was not involved and she's lying to get more information from Cecilia. Well, do you really think you're going to get good information by muddying the water? How does that help?
It doesn't. It's ridiculous. Another thing that they talk about the tape, you know, the alleged confession with Cecilia, it is very poor quality audio. You can't hear a lot of it. I talk to you every day on the phone, Aaron, with my Sprint phone. And guess what? I hear about every other word you say to me, and I'm able to figure out what you say. The prosecution is the one that has this tape. They play it for everyone in the courtroom, and they transcribe it. The defense says that the transcription is wrong and that you can't figure it out, but the defense didn't have enough money to hire their own expert to transcribe it. So they say they're at a loss here because the prosecution had the funds to do all this. So their version of this conversation is gospel and they can't deny it. But it's not even really the parts that you can't hear that are the most damning parts. So I don't really see how this goes any other way. I don't hear Cecilia saying that, oh, yeah, I know. I had everything to do with it. You didn't know about this? Like, it just doesn't come out that way at all.
Right. If anything, Pamela comes across as being guilty. In fact, she tries to say, well, I didn't pay them to do this. I didn't tell them they had to do it. I wasn't there. I was somewhere else. There are all these excuses. But again, you can coerce people to do things without giving them a check.
And one more point about the whole conversation is during the conversation with Cecilia, they establish that Billy and his friends are the perpetrators of this murder. Does Pamela Smart go to police with this information after the conversation? Oh, that'd be no.
Right. So, yeah. Let's put it this way. So if you go through the evidence here, there's stuff here that's just, it's insurmountable. So you have Cecilia who's in the room talking to her. So you have a witness there. Forget what you've transcribed. Forget what's recorded. There's a witness talking to her. So her testimony backs up the transcription.
Yeah.
Not only that, but here's something that's really curious. Remember I said that Pamela had to drive the boys over to Haverhill.
To drop them off at the car.
She was wearing jewelry on basically every finger and had necklaces around her neck because she was making sure that if they ransacked the place, they wouldn't get the good jewelry. Mm-hmm. They would get other jewelry. She's wearing the good jewelry. They end up getting jewelry that's not quite as good. I would say when she says that she didn't pay anyone to do this, she did. She let them ransack the condominium and take whatever they want. If that's not payment, not to mention there was $140,000 worth of life insurance on Greg.
Yeah.
So if he dies, she gets $140,000. She can afford to give them $500 a piece, no sweat.
Yeah. And I heard $1,000 a piece, but you know, we're not going to split hairs here.
Hey, 500, 1,000.
Yeah.
These are large amounts of money to high school students.
Exactly. If you think back to the failed attempt where Billy and Raymond went to the condominium and then didn't do anything. According to Raymond, they went to the
where she's at,
to Pamela's office afterwards, and she's very upset when they hear that they didn't do it. Now, according to Raymond, they pull up in the parking lot. She comes out and gets in the car. and they're having an argument. And Raymond's actually not really involved in this conversation. It's really just Billy and her, and she's screaming at him. They turn up the music so people can't hear the conversation, and then they end up dropping off Raymond, and then she goes and drops off Billy. Now, when Raymond first makes a statement, and they say, did she tell Billy to kill Greg? Raymond kind of says something to the effect of, I don't know, I didn't talk to her. Technically, he's correct. He never really did talk to her. She was always talking to Billy. Later on, he will retell this story about them going and her getting in the car and having this conversation. And people will point this out as, well, that's a discrepancy in his statement. First, he says he doesn't know. Now he's saying he absolutely was in the know. You're a young kid and you kind of don't want to get yourself involved with this murder. I can kind of see why you're going to say, I don't know, I didn't talk to her. But at the same time, he wasn't exactly lying either.
Well, he was withholding information. Now, he was also the oldest one of the group.
Yeah.
So he was, well, closer in age to Pamela than the others were. And one of the things that's said to Billy by Pamela is that she said, you must not love me. Otherwise, you would kill him.
When he's paroled, though, he will retell the story. There's this documentary on HBO called Captivated. And as much as the filmmaker says it's not supposed to be a pro-Pamela Smart documentary, it very much is. I mean, it's blatant. But at the end, they're talking to him, and they're talking about the movies that are made. And they're saying, well, this guy must be misremembering. He must have watched the movie, and now he's thinking about it. But in and he goes, well, in the movie, they get it wrong. It shows Billy and I going into the office and talking to her. And the whole argument happening in there. He goes, that's not how it happened. She came out to the car. So for somebody that's misremembering or creating a whole entire scene in his own head, he actually corrects the movie. So I don't believe that he created this all in his head, because he's remembering it the way it actually happened and he's correcting it. But at no point do they say Pamela hasn't made herself believe that she had no involvement. I mean, they don't put that forth in this documentary, but they'll definitely question all the boys and their statements at the time.
Well, I have some thoughts on that. Joyce Maynard wrote the book To Die For and the movie that they made from it. She went so far as to say that there's a lot of her imagination at work in it. And so she doesn't really want people to use it as evidence against Pamela either way. I mean, for or against her. I mean, it's a movie. It's a story. It's been fictionalized.
But like she said, though, the movie's based off true events. So why would that even be in the movie if it wasn't in a police statement or some other kind of testimony? She wouldn't have put it in there.
Well, I guess the thing with Joyce is she's, when you go to make a movie like this, they never make it fully truthful.
They take their liberties.
And maybe for the movie, it made a better scene or discussing it in the office rather than having the argument in the car. Maybe that would be a more difficult shoot. I have no idea. Yeah. Or maybe it just didn't play as well in her head. But as far as Raymond not coming out and saying originally what he should have, well, sometimes people don't talk right away. And it's not like he denied being there. He was there.
Yeah.
He just said, I don't know, but he was in the car. I mean, how much distance can you have in a car? Obviously, he heard everything that was said. Yeah. Let's be honest.
But even Cecilia didn't give it all up the first encounter she had with police. She was like, I don't know. She distanced herself also. So you're getting a little bit of inconsistent statements, but it's kind of inconsistent because you can tell that they're trying to protect themselves at first, and then they are coming clean later.
I think what's at work here is you have friendships on the line. We already said that Pamela and Cecilia became good friends, and I think it's that situation where until they get some distance between them and some distance in time, it's difficult for people just to come clean. Yeah. You have that sense to protect someone that you care about. With Raymond, you know, it's, he's on the line, his buddy's on the line, there's this woman that his buddy loves is on the line, and this is a difficult situation. But later on, a lot of these people come clean and start to talk and tell exactly what happened.
Yeah. And Billy and the others, they will admit on the stand that this was premeditated and planned out. I have kind of an issue with their plea bargain they took because they're getting second degree murder charges, which have a possibility of parole. But on the stand, they're talking about how they literally committed a first degree murder. It's kind of back to my whole plea bargains only help the guilty and don't really do much for the innocent. But we'll move on from there.
Well, I don't know if we should move on just yet, because I do think it needs pointing out that Billy and Pete Jr., they're minors. And we've talked about it before. When you sentence a minor and you say you can never be paroled, you're in for life, it's tough.
They're charging them and sentencing them as adults, though. But they're still taking that into consideration.
Right. They're trying to play it both ways. But I guess what I'm trying to say is we cover it with the Brian Shepherd case, where you're saying that the Supreme Court has said that 17 or 16, what have you, it's too young. You can't say to that person your entire life is wiped away because of something you did.
Yeah.
And some of these things that happen with some of these people, like with Billy, what he did was horrible. Mm-hmm. But he's still a minor. And we're not going to get into it just yet. But we'll talk about how someone like Billy could be driven to murder.
Yeah. For Pam's defense, they brought actually one of Greg's friends onto the stand to testify that he had a conversation with Pamela Smart about the conversation she had with Cecilia and her saying that she was giving up more information and saying she knew something about this to get Cecilia talking. And apparently this other friend of Greg's had a conversation with her about it. So that's the defense's retort. But it doesn't mean that she's telling the truth. It doesn't even mean it really happened. But he was on the stand to testify for the defense, which is a little telling because it's one of Greg's friends. When Pamela gets on the stand, the defense throws her softballs and lets her tell her story. But she does talk about Greg cheating on her, which I'm like, well, that just gives you more motive to kill him. Like, I don't know how that helps you. They talk about how she was playing this game with Cecilia to give her more information, but yet the audio isn't, you can't hear what's saying. It's just a mess. Prosecution gets up there and in my mind destroys her. She is talking in circles and she has nowhere to go. The prosecution has complete control of that courtroom and Pamela Smart.
Well, they have too much on their side.
Yeah.
They're holding all the best cards. Pamela, I think, is holding a card that hurts her throughout the case, which is arrogance. She really believes that she's smarter than everybody and that she had this whole thing figured out. So I'm sure there are people out there that believe that Pamela Smart is innocent and had nothing to do with it, or at the very least, they're not convinced that the prosecution was able to show that she did this or had a hand in it. But I think most people will find that there's just too much stacked against her here. Now, most of it's reasonable. Most of it is you have people that were involved in the murder or planning it who have come out and admitted to it. And you have other evidence that supports that, physical evidence. You have the life insurance policy and the cheating that supposedly are the motivations for her. Although I would argue that they're drifting apart and her not wanting a divorce. That's behind a lot of these spousal murders, is someone just does not see divorce as a reasonable
exit.
Way out, yeah. As a reasonable exit. So it's just going to happen that way. There's property involved. There's a dog involved. So she didn't quite understand her place in all of this. I thought, I know she would never have done this, but she would have done herself some favors by going to the police first.
She really would have. She would have gone directly to them and talked to them, even said, Billy Flynn did this. You know, is it in her head that her and Billy can be together now that Greg's out of the picture and that's why she didn't go to them? You know, who knows?
We could talk about that. I mean, and here's a scenario that probably would have worked for her. If she had just gone to the police and said, yeah, I was telling Billy that my husband was a horrible person, that I wanted him gone, And he took it too far.
Yeah, she totally could have
used
that.
She could have done that. And then everything Billy would have said, you know, that may not have worked in his favor anymore. It would have been like, well, it would have presented a scenario where she's the one that came to them and talked to them first.
Yeah.
But she never tried that. And I think it's because in her head, she didn't do anything wrong. Again, we can point out she pulled up in the car and she's wearing all that jewelry because she doesn't want them to take it. She's driving them to get the car. She's the one that told them how to do it. She's the one that told them what kind of clothes to wear gloves. I mean, she laid out the whole scenario. They put the dog away just like she wanted them to. Everything was done the way she wanted it done.
But according to her, none of that happened and it's all made up. Cecilia made it all up. All the boys made up all of this stuff just to save their own asses and implicate her so they could get reduced sentences.
The high school students, she's the adult. The high school students were more sophisticated than she was.
Apparently, she's not very smart.
This is such a problem for me because we've already said it. Her academic record speaks for itself.
Yeah.
She's a very capable person. But again, if you want to find how, if you want to discover what brings down someone who's intelligent, it's arrogance. And that's just what I keep seeing with her. She just thinks that she's just so much smarter than everybody and that she believes she's going to get away with it. You brought it up. There are problems with the trial. It's not really fair the way that they just sort of pushed it out really quickly and didn't move the venue. We could argue that all day long. I think the venue thing is the most important. I know it became national news in a way, but I think there's something about people who live in the town.
Yeah.
That you're more apt to find people who are biased.
That's my biggest issue was the no change of venue. But I think, say, Casey Anthony or O.J. Simpson, they were found not guilty with the same amount of coverage. So six of one, half dozen of the other. Yeah, I see it as a problem, but I don't know how much it factored in.
It's one of those things that's more of a technicality. Mm-hmm. But really, I think you could run this trial 10 times in 10 different areas, and I would be surprised if it went any other way.
So Billy Flynn received 40 years to life, eligible for parole after 25 years. And he is granted parole in 2015. Patrick Randall, 40 years to life, is eligible for parole, and he made parole in 2009. Vance
Latimy,
30 years to life, and he got a reduced sentence and was paroled in 2005. Raymond Fowler, 15 to 30 years, and he was paroled in 2003. Pamela Smart, for first degree accessory to murder, got life without the possibility of parole. A few things that stuck out to me is none of these people have recanted their statements or come out in support of Pamela since their parole. They're not saying, oh yeah, we wrongfully convicted this person. We see that. We see a lot of recantments. We see people come out in support of, but none of them are. Pamela has appealed this, I think, at least three times, basing it off of the media coverage, making it an unfair trial. You know, they didn't change the venue. She's had some valid points on her appeals. Every single one of them has been denied. So she has changed tactics, and now she wants to go with a pardon because that's the only way she can get out. She's pissed off that all the people that were actually physically involved with the murder are out of prison, and she's not going to get out anytime soon. So the actual trigger man, the getaway driver, all these people that had a hand in it are free, and she has no chance of being free because in that state, it's no possibility of parole. So she's trying to say that's cruel and unusual, or as harsh as we've been on Pamela for this entire episode. I actually have to say that I think she deserves the possibility of parole. The possibility. I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying that she needs to be out. She's learned her lesson. I'm just saying she needs that possibility. I looked up multiple murder for hire cases where people have been caught red-handed trying to hire somebody to murder somebody else. Most of them got between 20 to 40 years for this. One ex-police officer murdered his wife and then hired a hitman to kill the prosecutor. He got 38 years for murdering his wife, and then he got 40 years for the murder for hire. We have murderers and rapists that are paroled after 7 to 10 years. I kind of think her sentence is a little unfair. I don't know. I mean, somebody gets somebody to murder somebody, they can rot in prison, right? But I think she should at least be allowed a possibility of parole myself.
But how many of those cases happen in New Hampshire?
Exactly. Most of them are in other states that, you know, that they have a possibility of parole. Even a life sentence has a possibility of parole. New Hampshire does not. That's not their law.
We're arguing over something that New Hampshire's decided that they are in favor of, which is if you plan someone's murder and carry it out, you can never be let out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that really stands out in this case to me is that Greg Smart's family were not against the decision to parole these guys.
No, they said that as long as they acknowledge what they've done and show remorse, they've done their time and they're okay with them. They know that they've made a mistake.
So this is where they've also made comments about Pamela Smart, because Pamela Smart's been rather aggressive, as you said. Well, how come they get to be let out? They're already out and I'm still locked away and I wasn't even there.
Yeah.
This is a complete misunderstanding on her part. Greg Smart's family, his brother Dean, his uncle Rick, they have said they would love to hear her admit to what she did to show remorse, but she hasn't done it. Mm-hmm. And so they don't even want to say they support any kind of parole action, even though she's not really eligible for it. But they say they can't support anything like that because she's not acknowledged her complicity in this. On her side, she's saying, well, I didn't have a part in it. But let's be honest here. The evidence shows that she did have a hand in it. She was the one who organized this. She's not taking any kind of accountability here. Since she's in New Hampshire, she's stuck with life in prison.
Yeah, she's stuck with New Hampshire law.
But I will say this. You're saying she should have parole. I think parole in this case, not actually giving it to her, but the possibility of it might, and I'm not saying for sure, but might be the carrot that is needed for her to have some sort of reflection and reconsideration of how she's handled this whole thing. Because if she knew she might be able to get out, maybe then she'd finally admit, okay, I was telling Billy that Greg needed to go. If she could start there, who knows? We might have a little bit of reconciliation here, because people do forgive.
Yeah.
They don't forget, but they might forgive. And we've already seen Greg Smart's family. They were there for the hearing when William Flynn was granted parole,
yeah,
which I think was on his birthday. They just said, you know, we hope you do something good with your life. We don't want you going to the media, but please make a difference with your life. And he acknowledged that. Flynn said, I do feel like I need to tip the scales back again. There was understanding there. He admitted being the murderer.
This is the guy that is said to have pulled the trigger and killed their son, and they're cool with him being let out.
And another thing is Bill Smart, who is Gregory Smart's dad, he had died previously, but all along the way he had said he wants Pamela to admit. They're not comfortable with her maintaining her innocence when they know better. They know what happened. They just don't appreciate that. There's no way that they can ever support her ever getting out.
They can never let her out without her acknowledging what she's done. She has to admit that what she did was wrong. Otherwise, she hasn't learned a lesson. She hasn't figured anything out. I personally don't really care if a prisoner shows any type of remorse, but I think an acknowledgement is important. I mean, anyone can say, oh, I'm sorry for what I've done. I mean, I think it's, you know, you can lie your way out of prison if that's all it takes, but just acknowledging that, yeah, this was me and I did this, and that's your first step to bettering yourself and becoming a better person. And if you can't do that, then maybe letting you out isn't the best thing.
Right. When you've lied for so long and someone's giving you that opportunity to come clean and you don't take it, it makes them angrier. It hurts them more. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're getting from Pamela. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.